difficult to make a bridge and to start a discussion so quickly. Are there any immediate question that you would have? The main text that you're referring to from Baldwin, Argivan's Room and Another Country?
And bits from Native Son as well. And actually the full title of the piece is Native Daughter in Another Country Squatting Giovanni's Room. So alien can, alien skin. So yes, I researched those texts. I decided to research, pull texts from the fictions more so than the essays, because I believe that the fictions are underrated when we talk about his work, that a lot of people don't really speak about how far ahead he was in those narratives. And I believe he spoke intersectionality before that word was bandied about within cultural studies.
Maybe you could comment a bit, like you have a lot of images that you show from Paris, but you take also found footage from Baldwin's moments at television. You show images from the US today. So maybe you can comment a bit on the way how you interview them.
So basically I did this piece for the Baldwin conference that was happening here at the American University of Paris. So I purposely made it a little bit more academic, if you will, rather than less performative. But I used the Seine because for me, two reasons. I was identifying as well as someone who left, I left America not to move to Paris. I lived in London first, but I knew I was not going to go back. And that was a while ago. When I finally arrived in Paris, of course, I discovered the Pont de Saint-Louis. So this was kind of, I mean, of course, there's lots of places called Saint-Louis, but I come from St. Louis. So this had a resonance for me. And then also the idea of moving water always has a resonance for me because the water carries stories and the water has memory. So I think other than that, it's quite obvious why I would use the Seine of Paris and re-put that back. And then also the walking motif, I use that a lot as well because it's just a way of symbolizing or a metaphor for moving through space and time and traveling. And the text I pulled, you know, from different places. Most of it comes from Giovanni's Room in Another Country.
I don't know, and how far, Candice, you want to become part of the discussion? Because you have this whole first chapter of the In the Wake installation, which is the one for those who arrived late that is under the window. And I say chapter knowing that it's not really one, but the whole first part that resonates with what we heard from Joseph's reading from the text, Giovanni's Room, the sea change, this very strong presence of the sea metaphor in Baldwin's writing. And you give it a really big part in your work. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, actually, Jamika and I, when we hung out earlier, we were talking about that because her newer performance that she just did in Portugal also was dealing more specifically with the sea. I think I haven't seen it, but just from hearsay. I was thinking about the sea change that appears not only in Giovanni's Room, but in some of his other writing about this idea of the sea change, which he says in the first photograph that's from his archives as this idea of rich and strange. I was reading it in the way that I think, Jamaica, in your performance, you also read it as like that to undergo a sea change is to face an internal sea of whatever self-hatred or self-loathing is kind of like hard to look at. And for me, I was trying to relate that to our larger cultural and maybe national histories of water and how water holds the memory of a lot of things that we don't want to think about anymore. So specifically for the countries that were involved in the transatlantic slave trade, I followed the archival image from Baldwin's archives of the sea change with a passage from In the Wake by Christina Sharp, where she's talking about the slaves who were thrown overboard for an insurance claim, actually, during a kind of botched delivery of slaves, and it appeared in a legal case that was then turned into a poem by Marlene Norbis Philippe. I can't say her name. Called Zong with an exclamation mark, which was a mistranslation of the name of the ship that the slaves were on, which was Zorg, actually, I think, in Dutch, and meant care. So it's this kind of strange choice of name. So I was thinking about the sea in Giovanni's room. I was thinking about the sea as this kind of like repository of all these things we can't quite face, but also the Seine in the same respect for me was not just as the city or the river that goods came in on, but also obviously the history of the Algerian massacre. So it's interesting that in Jamaica's performance also there's this kind of walking along the Seine too. Yeah.
It was around the time, it was not so far long after we had that huge flood, I think. So it was that way. Nope. I didn't think of that, but you know, I think that whatever spirits told me to go there, because you know, I speak to voices speak in my head, especially when, you know, nobody's finding it funny, whatever. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Cause I have such a deadpan face. Everything I say is serious. No, yeah, there's definitely a resonance about. Go ahead, you're gonna say something.
I was just remembering when we met that yeah. We had this moment of talking about. Christina Sharp talks about this idea of residence time.
Yes. And
time also appears in your work here. But residence time, she talks about in her book as the time it takes for molecules of matter to dissolve into
exactly.
another material.
She
so
says
she's talking about it in terms of the bodies that decomposed in the sea, that it would take some 600
like
million years
yeah,
or
like
something.
250,000 million years or something like this. Yeah, exactly. She also quoted, she also said that you would never die of old age in the sea. So my new, and the newer piece that I've been working on that I did for the first time in Portugal, I did experiment with that. And well, I always have this feeling of life. There's a Congo, a thing in the Congo where you wear this kind of cosmogram, which means that you have an understanding how rivers and sea, and the sea is all about understanding communication between the living and the dead. And with the new piece, not to talk about it too long, I stole a kind of from a group called Drexia. I don't know if you're familiar. Anybody know this group? Drexia, Detroit electronic music. And their story was that the fetuses of unborn babies that were in the wombs of women who were thrown overseas, because you have to remember too, they threw people overseas so that they could get money back. They're expendable cargo, okay? So that's why a lot of the bodies went overboard. And so the idea was that these fetuses became somehow new life living under the water. So I expanded on that idea. And then I started to develop this idea of, because there's also for me an issue about the Mediterranean and the cargo at in the Mediterranean, and the lives are lost, have been lost over the last decade there, which are not talked about too much. So I tried to update it. So and I thought to myself, there must be, if there's life, because there, I think it's the only part of the earth where it's not explored. There's like the majority of the deep sea is not explored, even though now corporations are putting in money to find resources and thereby destroying. anyway, that's another story. Okay, going back to what it was I was going on about. I'm thinking that why not, if there's a residence time, why not with a new life undersea and new ways of developing life undersea that... there aren't like scientists who are able to take the cells and the atoms of the bodies that are under the water that get eaten by other fish and create embryos and this way create new populations. And you guys are looking at me like I'm crazy, but it came to me in a dream, in a vision, and I got some transmissions from, I think it started at the Seine actually. Okay, so I think I always had this idea of life before I read Christina Sharp, that there was life and, again, memory. The water holds memories of things, past and future. And for me, that was very important to include that as a part of the work. And normally I don't do that River Runs Deep piece. In fact, that was a part of the new piece, but I did that especially for you, Candace, at the beginning of that, performative lecture, anti-lecture.
Wondering if when you used reverberation, if it had to do with this idea of like return.
Yeah, it was a lot to do with like return, and also I like repetition. I like also kind of some things. I think a lot of times when you use reverberation definitely is talking about resonance and things that come back, for sure. But I also think that there's something that aids in a kind of intuitive knowledge, because the reason why I call these series of performative lectures, if you will, anti-lectures, is because I'm trying to get beyond traditional pedagogy. Sorry, I'm really tired. I haven't slept, but like 2 hours. Create a space where you share knowledge, where you don't own that knowledge, and that people, through all of their senses, and not necessarily consciously, gain knowledge, or discover knowledge that's already present in your cells.
So you work with elements, with visual elements, with audio elements, and a lot of these compositions that you do yourself. Are these part of the work that you do with your group also?
No, this is a whole different thing. I mean, sometimes there's crossover. There's always crossover. But no, I compose this stuff specifically for each piece. And sometimes within, I don't know, I have several anti-lectures. If you put them all side by side, they become one long audio-visual essay. So I do resample myself. No, I create the sounds. I mean, it's crazy. Like, this is one of the more academic-y pieces where I talk so much, right, when I'm talking a lot. I use a lot of narrative that I make up, plus academic text. And what happens is sometimes it starts with just a vague idea of text, but there's always also images. And sometimes then when I figure out the images, and I'm not sure why I think that image is good, it will inform the text, which then in turn will inform the sound. Then I find the sound, which will inform the text. So it's kind of circular, okay?
So I have to take that. That I think is not at all by chance that in the way how you construct your stories, there's something that works a lot with fragments, and that works a lot with compositions of elements that come from totally different categories. And so that's in the moment when they meet and when they interact that there are stories that are told that wouldn't be told if these elements would be disconnected. And so in a way, for me, there's beyond the fact that all three of you work with Baldwin, like there's also something in the way to think about narration and to think about this engagement of a kind of, dialogue partner through time and space, which allows to construct another narrative of the self that is like echoing or having strong reverberations in the works of you three. I kind of have the impression that you don't want to speak yet.
I was thinking about the sea change because, Candace was mentioning the legacy of Sedat Pakay, this Turkish photographer who followed James Baldwin when James Baldwin was living in Istanbul. I got reminded of this photograph. It's like a silhouette of Baldwin in front of a big window facing the Bosphorus. And in my film, it also comes up. And the first time I've seen that photograph, I was puzzled because Istanbul looks so different now, so I couldn't pin where it might be located. So either on the European side or on the Asian side, but you can't really tell actually which side of the Bosphorus Sea was. So it's also something actually that was important for me, the sea of change. But also another photograph that Sedat Pekay took was important for my film. Baldwin is eating a fish sandwich in one of those like lunch breaks, I guess, while he was like trying to finish his novel. And then you see again, actually, you know, from the back, and above Baldwin there are two framed photographs. One of them is of John F. Kennedy, and the second one is of Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the founding person of the Turkish Republic. So he writes a lot about, you know, these things. And then, you know, I think he was trying to take an exit and a constructive and productive exit out of the things that we discussed here. But he knew maybe actually that he would be maybe more in the United States if he would have like taken another country of residence, for example. So Turkey was back then not so Americanized, or, you know, wasn't that under the American influence maybe, but still it was. So this also comes up. So this sea of change, I believe, was also, you know, related to the concept of imperialism, or, you know, I mean, I think, you know, some wider structures actually, you know, we can maybe also discuss about these things. So, I was also maybe wondering, you know, this essay form is, you know, maybe we can talk about this, Jamika, because when I was also, you know, when I started working on this film, I didn't know what to do, like, before. I knew, actually, that I wanted to make a film, but I didn't know how to start, how to approach. And then at some point, actually, I was maybe inspired and maybe also informed by Baldwin himself, because he, it's a personal statement, but I mean, I like his essays better than his novels, and also this inner dialogue, you know, this inner monologue that we all have, that you also brought up, this like this knowledge that one loses or gets reminded of, how you explain this like in relation to reverberation. It was important for me, so I guess the essay form was like really important for me. So maybe we can talk about essay.
You want to talk about the essays?
Maybe, like, I mean, as a form.
I mean, do you allow me a footnote? So in a certain manner, there's also what I find totally striking in a lot of Baldwin's essays is, at the one hand, the fact that they take, for a couple of them, very quickly position on what is going on in the world. So there is a reactivity to political events that are happening, into his positioning in that. And then there's also the exact opposite in the movement, which is a kind of slowing down things that would happen in a couple of minutes. So quite rapidly and without calling any attention, and that by the fact to become a Baldwin essay start to become problematic issues, and so they can be worked about in a political manner. And I think it's really interesting what you say. I can also, in relation to the work of the three of you, like in how far your space of artistic work is a space that you consider in relation with what goes on around you, it's like taking politically position, and at the same time having this space of retreat that was, for example, the space that Baldwin was looking for when he left for Istanbul.
I really like his essays. I really like them, but I know that the books, like, well, more so Another Country, I think, at a certain period in my life, really kind of saved me, because it reflected a reality that was more real to me. It reflected a reality where intersectionality existed, where sexuality was fluid, because we have, you know, we didn't it didn't just happen now because everybody knows about those words, gender fluidity and shit. It is not because it, you know, suddenly came up. It's been happening since time. In the 1920s, the blues women, you know, were talking about that outright. You know, Ma Rainey was like, you know, I'm sure I was out with women because I don't like no men. She said this stuff. And I don't think that Baldwin necessarily had the freedom in a certain kind of way to speak about his intersectionality, his sexuality within the essays. Whereas within fiction, he could deal with it much easier. Now I'm just making a presumption. Maybe for him, maybe that wasn't the case. But there we have black, white, gay, straight, straight people discovering their bisexuality. We have black and white people together dealing with issues of coming together in this sense. And at the time when this book was published, these books were published, nobody was writing that. There was no one writing that. So this is why I find it in some, that's why I say I think it's underrated. And I understand, there's a certain kind of nowness, presence right now to when you're reading his stuff, his like Fire Next Time. You're like, yeah, 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 that's still today, yeah. You know, and especially if you're discovering him for the first time, because it is, it's quite powerful work. But I think that really and truly within our schools and universities, that it would be good to explore more deeply what was happening in his fictions. Yeah. For that reason.
Just to follow up on what you were saying, Icon, about the essay form, I think also like maybe one thing I see in all of our work is I think we all use essay where there's I feel like essay now has this illusion of being this non-fictional authoritative form, but it comes from the root to try. And I think we, all three of us, return to the personal subjective tone of the essay, where we are quite aware of and acknowledging the space of projection that maybe happens within in the personal as something that could be critiqued as a problem because it's not objective, but I think we are all kind of like done with maybe I'm speaking for you, but like not trying to assume any kind of objectivity, right? So we're all interested in the essay form, but in a more personalized tone. But I was actually wondering about this question of projection, because he goes to Istanbul to write Another Country. He says, I want to go to a country where I don't speak the language, and that's such a strange and hard statement in a way, right? To go somewhere where you want to be in the space of projection, because you're in a space where you're not, you have that distance. And I guess I struggle personally as an artist, like how much is too much self-indulgent projection? And I guess I think the personal is important for both Jamaica's work and for your work, Icon. And I guess I wonder how you grapple with that. Your essay was, I think, also that you sent me was also kind of dealing with those issues. So I don't know if we want to.
Yeah. Understand actually his, you know, attempt to refrain, to understand, was maybe a limitation for himself. It was like a task or an assignment for himself, I guess. So it was maybe more about himself than it was being about others, actually, how they would read it. Because I guess in Turkey, he also kind of enjoyed being himself, maybe more so than he was enjoying back by the time in the United States. And this particular, restriction or, you know, restriction was actually allowing him actually to enjoy this. I was, for example, you know, there was one photograph that I spent like, you know, some months to understand, because it was a photograph that shows James Baldwin getting a shoe shine in Istanbul, and he looks quite happy, and he enjoys the moment. For example, for me, it was like, you know, really I had to look at it, but you know, I needed to go beyond the surface to understand this, you know, set of emotions actually that are maybe hinted on his facial expression. But in the end, I understand, you know, the joy, and you know, to be somewhere else. And then, you know, this is, of course, like now. I mean, it's in, you know, a lot of questions are entangled. You know, the class question, or you know, the race. You know, I mean, Turkey is also a very specific context. But this, you know, this was quite informative for me as well, actually, to understand some other. You know, so sometimes actually we're also redundant in our readings, actually. Maybe we're too quick actually to make assumptions about these things. But I think he was just on hold for some time. He just didn't want to understand everything and then reflect upon these things. He just needed a slower pace, maybe. You know, this residence time, for example, this was maybe, he wanted the time to slow down a little bit.